Welcome to the Corporate Venturing Insider Series, where I interview top practitioners in the CVC world and learn with you the best practices and golden nuggets that they have accumulated over their career. In this episode, we will be learning from Dorm-Soo Kim, CEO of NG Technology Ventures. Dorm-Soo, could you take a few minutes to share your story and how you got to where you are today?
It's a little bit of a long story into my journey into corporate venture because it wasn't a sudden entry. It was more gradual. All along, since when I was in school, I was had two passions in terms of my career. One was technology and science, and the other one was business. Unfortunately, when you're in school, you have to choose one or the other. There isn't a good program that connects those two. So I started on the engineering side. So I did get a PhD in electrical engineering. I was studying mostly on compound semiconductor devices. So I'm a little bit of a physicist and a device engineer. And even during grad school, I always thought maybe I should just get a master's or an MBA and then get into more business side of things. But I was pretty good at what I was doing in terms of the R&D and engineering. So I just continued on and ended up getting my PhD. And my first job was with Samsung Electronics. I was doing R&D on the fiber optic component business. What really transformed my career was in 2001, when the whole fiber optic market crashed, Samsung decided to exit that business. And at that time, I had an option to change my career. I could have stayed in R&D and become R&D engineer in LCDs or displays or whatever, but I said, no, I want to try my hand on the business side of things. I joined the Technology Alliance team, where my mission was to try to find R&D partners, universities and R&D centers, but also startups. And that's when I first got connected with a corporate venture capital team, which the work looked very interesting. And that's exactly what I felt like, something that I wanted to do all along. It did take a couple of years of convincing the head of the venture team to take me on, but he eventually did, fortunately. And then he took quite a bit of risk because everybody else in the team had some background, but I was the only guy who had just technology background. But he did send me to a crash 6-week MBA course, and then I learned a lot on the job. So this was actually in 2005 that I stepped into the corporate venture capital world. So that was my gradual journey toward this industry.
Very nice. Would you say that you are making the same bet as he did, where you take people who don't have the full package of skill set?
I do, yes. It's really hard to, as you can imagine, find people who have both investment experience and technology experience, right? And those people, even if you find that it's in such high demand that you have to really compete against other CVC firms, we tend to skew more on people who have more investment background with some engineering education and then train them on the investment aspects. And also have one person who has a PhD in my team who has more of technology background, which now I'm training him on the business side of things. So the short answer is yes, we are open to it. Just finding people, train them so they can have more complete skill set in this business.
Very nice. And you mentioned you have someone with a PhD, you have your own PhD. The view I have of PhD is that it's some people who have committed years of their lives to go very deep, which means patience, but also deep research. Do you think this helps you to be a better investor, or there is some maybe caveats to it?
So there's definitely, like anything in the world, there's the positive side and the negative side. It also depends on what kind of PhD you got. Again, my undergraduate degree was in applied physics, and my PhD was very closer to the physics side, which provides a very good fundamental to learn new technologies, right? So although I was device physicist by training, I could invest in companies and, for example, doing LiDARs or equipment or materials and so forth, right? So that was good. So again, if you want a science training, it's important to have a good grasp of the fundamentals. The negative side of coming from the technology side is when you try to evaluate investment, you tend to focus too much on the technology. I learned through the years that, yeah, technology is just one piece of the puzzle or one leg of the stool, right? There are other aspects that are equally, if not more important for a business to succeed. So you shouldn't just invest in a company just based on the technology, right? So that's, as you gain experience, you learn those things, right?
I like the analogy of a leg of a stool, because if you miss a leg, you will fall. But it's not the only thing you need to look at.
Exactly.
And if I remember, you graduated in California. Did you go back to Korea at some point for Samsung or LG, or it was always in the US?
I did go back and forth. So again, that's where it comes in. I've experienced both Korean culture and California. Actually, my undergrad was in California. I did at Caltech, and then PhD was the East Coast at Princeton. But after that, when I joined Samsung Electronics, I went back to Korea and lived there for about 13 years. So I did start out my corporate venture capital career in Korea. If you have to be at the center of the venture capital world, you have to come to Silicon Valley. So I made a decision to come out here late 09. So I've already been here more than 12 years.
That's amazing. So tell us about your first year, building the team, building the process, building the pipeline.
Yeah. The first day of work, I show up. It was just myself. Fortunately, I did negotiate what kind of structure I wanted before joining. So I wanted a dedicated fund structure, not out of the balance sheet. And all that. And of course, the LG also consulted external lawyers to structure how it needs to be structured. And I agreed to that. So that was in place. The difficult part once after joining was building the team. First thing I did was reach out to my network, people that I co-invested in the past, who I knew that they were looking for a new opportunity, frustrated with their current job. And so I reached out to them and talked to them, convinced them. And that's how I recruited my managing directors, for example, right? It's all people that I knew. So it was a bit easy decision for me, right? Because I went out after people I knew and I liked. So that became the core team and then built everything else around it. One thing I also made sure is I also hired people who shared my same values, people who want to be good people in general, not somebody who's overly aggressive or who have no respect for others. You have to have a lot of respect for the entrepreneurs. They are doing all the heavy lifting. And that kind of determined our culture. And then people who hired afterwards, they just molded into culture.
Very nice. What would be the KPI, or what is a KPI you place on the business development team? This is a moving target. As you start to mature, then you can be more and more ambitious for the business development team.
Yeah. Before talking KPIs, I think business development team has multiple roles, right? Business development, of course, is one role. Another role they have is managing RLPs, right? The business units. Understand what their strategy and which areas to invest. Because unless we understand what the people in Korea, you cannot send them the right deal. So that's another role they have. And the third role they have is just generating more intelligence, market intelligence. Because any corporate venture capital team, they expect you to bring some of that Silicon Valley insight to the corporate, right? And the investment team guys, of course, they have a lot of insight and all that, but that's not what they like doing because they are more of investors. So that's what CVBD team does, those three roles. So their KPI reflects some of them. They have to write certain inside reports. They are expected to create some business relationship between our portfolio and the headquarters. It could be either joint development or some supply deal, but they're expected to create some output like that. And all that is all qualitative, right? How they're doing their job as a CVD team.
Very nice. And are they all based in Silicon Valley or do you spread them around?
So that's one thing I consciously did was to put the headquarters here in Silicon Valley and have everybody come here. Different companies have different structure. Samsung Ventures, the headquarters in Korea, and most of the business development function is done by people in Korea. Only the investment team is in Silicon Valley, for example, right? There are positive and negative sides of both structure, right? But I really felt having very good interaction between the business development team and the investment team is very important, right? I mean, because they come from different backgrounds. So unless they're together and interacting daily, it's really hard to bridge the gap. I mean, the guy in Korea lived in Korea all their life, even though they might be interested in venture capital and startup, and Silicon Valley culture is hard for them to understand what goes on here. And so that's why I made that decision that everybody should be located here. But we are considering opening up other offices, right? Obviously, by being here, we have good coverage of the US, but eventually we will need to consider opening up an office in Israel and in Europe, for example.
We have two offices, one in San Jose, one in Boston, going to open one in Bangalore. So it's something you want to take your time to make decisions. You want to be really intentional. Many people comment that a CVC is only a CVC if it has survived a change of CEO. What's your view?
There's definitely some of that. again, every CEO, especially the incoming CEO, if somebody new, he doesn't understand what the role of the CVC is, and it creates a lot of tension. And by the time you finally educate a new person and he's now fully understands the value of CVC, then he might be replaced again. So that can make things really hard. I think what allows you to survive through the changes is basically building a solid track record. So if you have showed financial gain, then that just checks the box. Okay, you're making money, you're not losing money, right? Not every deal that you make will result in some strategic value, but if you have some cases where you can show that wow, we invested in this company and they did this and this with our business units, right? If you have those two track records, then the discussion becomes a lot easier. Because at the end of the day, they see less risk with what you do because you're not losing money, right? And you're creating some value. So the argument becomes a lot easier. Right?
Actually, I'm not going to say you're investing money. They will start saying you're spending money.
Yeah, exactly. And there's huge difference between those two, as we all know. But fortunately for me, for LG, because of how LG is governed by the chairman's office, which he's actually, our current chairman is quite young. He's 40, so he's going to probably run the LG group for another 30 years, which provides a very good continuity for many years to come. So that's another aspect that is quite fortunate.
I think it's actually very special. And you can have a long-term view because it's going to be there for the next 30 years. So I want to talk about two things. One is a value add to the mothership, and you just touched a little bit about showing the learning and so on, and then the value to entrepreneurs afterwards. How do you visualize, how do you make it very tangible that you're bringing strategic learnings, insights back to the mothership, and why do you do it?
Yeah. So there are multiple things that the mothership wants out of CVC, right? And some things you can provide sooner than later. Again, I already mentioned that Silicon Valley insight that they're looking for. It's really important to communicate that. As you go out and meet other VCs and entrepreneurs, there are certain things that you learn that is not on the newspapers. If you relay those information, that's appreciated and they do see the value in that. And that's something that you can do from day one. Obviously, the other value, which is hard to show, is try to show value from your portfolio companies. That takes quite a bit of time, right? You invest in a company and sometimes the direction of the company pivots or something is different from what you're looking for and all that. You really have to manage expectations very well. You have to let them know, look, this is a venture business, right? For example, not every deal that we invest is going to make money. Most of them actually will fail, but those two will cover all the losses and your fund will make money. Same thing with strategic benefit. Not every company that we invest may end up with strategic benefit. If we can come up with a few that does end up in very synergistic relationship with the mothership, then that's a big plus. And the impact is very big, right? So you have to set that expectation with the people. In that case, you're not scrutinized for every deal.
And that's also probably why you said a quarter of your team being the CVBD really is important.
Of course. Again, I can't stress enough, you do need a dedicated CVBD team because if you hire good investment professionals, that's their passion. They want to do investment. They don't want to spend a lot of time communicating with headquarters and convincing them all that. When CVBD team does that, that just makes the investment professional focus on what they do best, which is investment. So it's very important. And you do need a very regular conversation with people at mothership because, again, it's very hard for them to understand what you're doing out here in Silicon Valley. So communication is very important.
So let me put a little test on what you just described. Do you require some kind of immediate synergy with the company you plan to invest? Mm. By immediate, I don't mean on day two, but within a few months, you know it's going to have synergy. Or sometimes you make the bet that it's not going to be now, but I expect in 2-3 years, it'll bring value.
Realistically, you need to do both. So you do need a few companies that start working with the mothership relatively soon because that's what people are looking for, right? But if you're just doing just those kind of deals, then you're going to miss out in some of the bigger future opportunities. So you do need that balance. Sometimes people at headquarters might not see the value, but you have to be able to tell them, look, for the long term, this is a good bet. This is what's hot in Silicon Valley these days. Just trust us. And hopefully a few years down the road, you'll see the value of this company. So you need both. That's the short answer.
That makes a lot of sense. Talking of that, when you make decision, I'm assuming you don't need a business group champion as a consequence because you can tell them We don't need to. But is all the investment committee you and your core team, or do you have people from LG that also are part of the investment committee? Yeah.
Investment committee is all my team, all in Silicon Valley, managing directors myself. But for strategic deals, we do ask for the business unit's consent, saying that, yes, this is a technology area that we are interested in, and we can imagine working with this company in the future, right? We are an investment team. We understand what's a good investment. They understand why it's a good strategic value, right? It's not us deciding. So we do need that endorsement for strategic deals. But on the other hand, for more longer term benefit investments, we work with the holding company strategy team, and they're very flexible. They allow us to do all sorts of deals, right? Because they want to explore, they want to learn things. So we have that pocket of money that is very helpful for us.
The way I like to describe it is, we should act as if we need the approval of the business group. We shouldn't need one, but we act if we did. This way you create the right intimacy.
Exactly. Yep. As I said, you always have to keep your LPs happy. That's no matter what business you're in, whether they have this decision-making power or not, you just have to work with them.
Now let's talk about the most important stakeholder and how you add value to them, which is the entrepreneurs you bet on. How do you construct value add to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So obviously, the most low-hanging fruit is try to help them get engaged with people within LG in a win-win type of relationship. And a lot of companies do expect that from us. And then that's also some, many cases, part of the reason why they decide to take our money. So again, that's what the role of the business development team does, and that's very important. But also, there are all these little things here and there that people don't expect, that the help that you can provide. Just because I've been doing this for long enough, there are other investors that we could introduce to the company, and when they need to hire somebody, I might know somebody who can fill that position. And just a lot of times, general advice is always also very appreciated, especially in terms of working with big companies, not just LG. I have portfolio companies who worked with both LG, Samsung, all our competitors, right? And that happens. That's it. But you have to be supportive of that. You got to, just because we invest, you can't tell them, oh, don't work with our competitors, right? And that's just not a model that works. The company is not going to succeed. And also, that's going to damage your reputation.
So your reputation would begun so fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So you tell them, look, I think big companies, if you're going to talk to Samsung, maybe you want to approach it this way or whatever, right? Or if you have multiple customers that they are dealing with, and you tell them, oh, look, you want to create this kind of competitive tension that will get a lot of their attention, right? So for example, I tell them straightforward, don't just work with LG, right? Talk with multiple people, because that way you'll also get more attention from LG, because they know you're talking to multiple people. It's always appreciated.
Yeah. In a way, many of what you described as value add is what a very good financial VC would bring. Another area you've mentioned earlier, but I think it's true also here, is the value you bring as a board member. Can you talk us through the value you bring and whether it's different whether you're an observer or a full board member?
There is quite a bit of difference between an observer and a full member. Of course, an observer can also contribute a lot to the company. But if you're a board member, you have to make decisions in a lot of different things, stock options or next round of financing, when to do it, how big to do it, all that, right? And you're constantly talking about those kind of things that normally board observers wouldn't participate in those kind of discussions, right? So as a corporate venture capital, in most cases, I feel observers enough. You really don't need a board seat unless you are experienced, at least a board member, or at least be able to make decision on those kind of things that normally an observer wouldn't. But in most cases, board director is just helping the company. You have the fiduciary duty. So you're not providing much benefit to the mothership by being a board director, full director versus an observer. But this is more to just help the portfolio a bit more.
Argue that you're more likely to be able to help the mothership if you're an observer than if you're a football member, where at that point you're...
Yeah, exactly.
Very nice. So we are getting to the top of the hour. Mm-hmm. I really want you to share what you think LG Technology Ventures wants to invest next. What are you excited about the next years?
So I think the biggest impact for LG Group as a whole is it's the electrification of the automobile, right? LG Energy Solution is a top two manufacturer of lithium-ion batteries in the world, and outside China, they're number one. And probably most auto OEMs are working with LG. So again, it's a and huge market, and it's going to be even bigger with a lot of impact. And it's not just batteries, right? The whole ecosystem around it is just going to be transformed. Everything from materials to cell manufacturing to battery management to electric motors and safety and informatics and all that. So there's a lot of interesting things to look at. And we've been quite active on that sector. And we are constantly looking at the investment on everything that has to do with the electrification of mobility. I think second area that I started to look more starting last year is things around metaverse. It's a very overused term and everybody doesn't have a good grasp of what really metaverse is or how it'll become. But I do see that it's going to be a big part of how people spend their time. Obviously, gaming transformed how people spend their time. If you look at my son, he spends most of his free time playing games, and that's a huge impact, right? I think metaverse will become a big part of how people spend their time, which creates a lot of opportunities in terms of marketing, social network, even tourism, right? Before going to Paris, you might want to check it out in the metaverse, right? A replication of a city, for example. So I do see that coming eventually. It's going to take a bit longer than people realize. People's habits don't change quickly. But I do see that becoming a part of life. So we invested in companies like Sandbox and also investing in a bunch of content creation companies in the metaverse like Wave and Amaze VR and so forth. So that's an area that I think is worth looking
at. And there's no doubt that startups will be the ones that create these innovations in new business model and use case.
Especially metaverse, I expect to be a lot more decentralized. A lot of exciting content and things like that will be created by startups, unlike other social networking platforms so far, like Facebook, which is controlled by a few companies. Metaverse, I expect it to be a bit different.
Very nice. And so for the entrepreneurs that are working in electrification, metaverse, all the topics you're interested, what type of check size and early stage, late stage can expect from you?
Yeah, because our fund is pretty big. We manage $450 million. So we tend to look a bit later stage. $1 to $10 million checks is our typical investment. Series A or later. Of course, there are exceptions, right? If we see an exceptional company at a C stage, then we might invest and write a smaller check. But normally, yeah, we like to see a bit bigger in Series A or later stage companies.
Very good. Donsu, thank you for your time. This was really nice for you to share your journey and your best practices and your learnings along the way. Thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for the opportunity. It was an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.